Welcome to Journals of a Healer, Unleash Your Hidden Genius. This is Mary Blake, your host. And today we have a very interesting guest, Ruby Corbin, who is owner of Ruby Corbin International, a boutique coaching, business strategy, and personal transformation company. And she draws upon her Wharton School of Business ABA, MBA, the Fortune 500 marketing expertise, and very highly developed and focused intuition to inspire her clients to achieve miracles, things that they often didn't know that they were capable of. So welcome to our show, Ruby. How are you doing?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic, Mary, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, I think that you have a lot to say, and I kind of would like to start out with where you came from. What was it like to be a young Ruby growing up?
Oh, yes, indeed. Thank you so much. Well, I'd say that we're always adult versions of who we were as children, and we have indelible markers that occur in our childhood that really inform our vision of the world. And so for me, I was always very precocious, and I was always interested in helping other people. I recall my father telling me a story about the fact that the teacher said that I wouldn't really allow her to teach because I was always taking a vested interest in making sure in elementary school that people understood how to do the different assignments that we had. And so I was always someone that really felt a need to assist others, to help others, and to help them be great. And so growing up as the little Ruby, as you say, was a very curious time because I always felt responsible to a certain extent for other people being their best selves, and then yet at the same time I always felt very different than other people. So that was really how my vision as a child really informed who I became as an adult.
Oh yeah, I always felt very different as a child too. I believe your parents were both caretakers, weren't they?
Both related in the health industry. My father was a physician, and my mother was an X-ray technician, but started out in nursing. So yes.
So that you kind of grew up just thinking that was the perfectly normal thing to take care of other people, huh?
Yes, but not so much from my parental background, but more so from that of my parents, but more so that I think our genius and our gifts and everything is divinely purposed. So it's part of our DNA, and it was nothing learned. It was more innate and something that I was called for to do.
I hear you. I know exactly what you mean. And along the way, did you find it was easy to get support for this idea, or were people trying to drag you in a different direction?
Well, my teacher certainly was, because I got told upon that I needed to harness my desire to help. But for the most part, it was very supported, because I think that people saw that I was well intentioned, and the direction in which I was helping people was truthfully where they needed to go.
Uh huh. That's fascinating. And what was important to you when you? How did you have fun when you were a child? What was that like?
Well, I have a very creative and active imagination, and I think that now sometimes it's somewhat is a disservice because my mind races and I go through all types of Monte Carlo situations.
Uh-huh.
And yesterday things. But as a child, I love fashion. I love beauty. I love making wonderful surroundings. So one could find me doing everything from playing with Barbies to going to antique stores with my mom to coming up with different creative business ideas. And so that fusion of creativity and business with that active, engaged imagination, and then someone who loved to speak. I love to do speeches and to talk and to bring forth my ideas. So it doesn't surprise me the type of profession that I'm drawn to and the type of surroundings that I like.
That's very interesting. It seems almost as if you were on track right from the beginning, and you just kept going. This is kind of fascinating because so many of us kind of get molded into something that is totally against our nature. And I think that's one of the reasons we have so many people that are making a lot of money in a profession that they hate, and they spend most of it in with a therapist, you know?
Yeah, they say you make money to get things you don't need, to impress people you don't like, and then you sit up in the therapist chair. So this is very true.
Yeah, well, so now... how did you begin getting the certification and the degrees and all the so-called legitimate stuff to be able to convince people that you knew what you were doing? How did you go about that?
Oh, sure, Mary. Well, first I have to say that life school has been my instructor, beyond my professional certifications and distinctions and degrees, more so than anything, you know, there's no mistakes in life. So even though we may feel initially that we were deterred from, you know, our goals and from what it is that we were called to do, if we really reflect upon those so-called experiences and life learnings that were called mistakes, it actually was the building block, if we're honest with ourselves, for where we've come today. But I always had an interest, as I indicated, from a child in business.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen that an MBA was one of the fastest trajectories, as I could see it, to, as you say, gain legitimacy. And so the Wharton School of Business in Philadelphia is, always ranked within the one or two or three, you know, schools within the country, depending upon who you ask.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
It's top rated. Yeah. It calls people to attention, shall we say.
Yes, yes, yes. And so I wanted to have that muscle and that strength and that pedigree behind me so that no matter what avenue I took, that I would have a fence, if you will, to lean upon. But the way in which I was able to really convince people that I was legitimate was to be road tested. And when people speak to me, actually, they called me forth into this, you know, recent incarnation of who it is that I am, because people were asking me for advice and opinions and to coach and mentor them. And so I saw that this was actually a profession, the expert industry, and an emerging profession. And so I got into that, but basically through people speaking to me, they understood that I had something to say, something of merit, and something that could legitimately assist them in their walk.
Mm-hmm. I always say that the degrees and the certificates we get are mostly useful in convincing people that we can do what we could do without them.
Absolutely, that's a good way of putting it.
And yet, the studies that you pursued seem to be giving you a certain amount of armor and a certain amount of ability to project a little further and a little clearer and to have a solid basis of business. Many times we givers in this world have absolutely no idea how to support ourselves.
Right, because what we do comes so naturally,
mm-hmm.
and it comes from the heart that we don't understand how to package it and properly monetize it and almost feel guilty about doing so. But the truth is that we were given the gifts to share, and money is just an exchange of value for what it is that we give to other people. And
that,
so, mm-hmm.
that's interesting, because my spirit guide, my number one gal, Stardust, always says that that nobody could agree upon which was the prettiest and which was the nicest and which tasted the best and which looked the best, and so what they had to do was they took something that was worth nothing and turned this into a system to project and to gauge the value of the most. And so what happens is that money is a symbol for the absolute best that humanity can produce. And I found that very interesting.
Right. And we have a lot of psychological attachments to money. And that's why it is elevated to a point that people feel very uncomfortable about the subject matter. And there's a whole industry around the energy of money and the psychology of money. And because of that, again, that's why people who are in the spiritual or healing profession have a fundamental issue with accepting payment for the work that they do, and or from being tagged as being wealthy from what it is that they do. But I can't think of any better industry than the healing spiritual industry to be justly compensated, such that then you can utilize those resources to continue to support interests and causes that galvanize the nation forward and the world forward.
Oh yeah. Well, I've had so many people say, "Well, healing comes from God. How can you charge for it?" And a very intelligent psychic said to me, "So does an opera singer's voice, and so does a surgeon's hands, and so does a mathematician's brain, and they all come from God. So what's the difference? I mean, what makes this so different from other human occupations that we should not be charged for it?"
Oh, exactly. And you know, it's something that is emerging as a legitimate skill and a talent, and therefore business. So that is changing, and it's evolving over time. And so people will see that it's something that should legitimately be charged for, because, again, if there's value being created, the money is just an energetic exchange of that value. And so your wealth really determines, that relates to monetary wealth, really is really determined by how many people have you served. You know, Bill Gates, as an example, his software at one point in time, his operating system, you know, governed the majority of computers in the world, and that was one of his goals, was that every, you know, computer be run off of Microsoft. And as such, he serviced all those people with his genius, and mm-hmm. he is a one of the richest people, always deviates in the top three in the world. And so what I'm saying is that he can now see how many people he's impacted through his wealth, and likewise, you being a coach or a healer or something of that nature, too, can see how many people, you know, you're impacting. And then there's a collateral impact that occurs as well, because if you help somebody else, they in turn can then show up and help you to help somebody else.
And how many artistic ideas and how many philosophical concepts and things have been facilitated by computers, which is mighty interesting. It's a totally different way to think of it, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And as I said, as this industry and this profession becomes more accepted, it will continue to be an infinite number. So I think we are, you know, in for very exciting times ahead, particularly as individuals start to migrate from traditional corporate careers into, you know, micro businesses, small businesses, entrepreneurship, things of that nature. We're going to continue to see the escalation of this. I'm not even going to call it a trend. I'll say it's a phenomenon.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds definitely right to me. It just rang very clear. You know, when you get that feeling, sometimes somebody says something, you can't prove it, but you know it's the truth because of the way you react. Sometimes people get chills, or sometimes they catch a breath, or sometimes it kind of goes bing. You know, however you respond to these truthful things when they're said, I just got one. I just got my chills when you said that. That's important, you know.
Oh, absolutely, and I mean that's just the trajectory of where things are going. Technology, you know, that, you know, Charles Dickinson said it's the worst of times and the best of times, and that's the thing with technology, Mary. Technology has rendered a lot of, you know, jobs and professions obsolete, and at the same time, it has also rendered a lot of people whose talent would have been by the wayside relevant and monetizable. And so we can really reach a world global technology, and part of that is, you know, this new migration into this profession of coaching, intuition, using intuition, and things of that nature.
Well, this is definitely a time when anybody can throw out an idea, and it can go around the world very quickly, and that is absolutely fascinating, because things that, you know, it took George Washington 3 weeks to get from New York to Washington, and look at what he accomplished. But imagine what a man like this could accomplish today.
Oh yes, and so I mean, wars have been waged on, you know, the internet. I think about Tiananmen Square. And, you know, the declaration that people should have human rights to, videos that have gone viral in this country to, you know, help people who needed money for important surgeries. I mean, it's just, we can think about the Obama campaign that was, you know, launched on the internet from kids who were excited about change, who donated $5 and $20 to his campaign.
Sure.
And he raised an unprecedented billions of dollars. And this was a poor man from, you know, inner city Chicago.
Sure.
Who was running against, you know, a billionaire. And he raised more money than any candidate to date. So I'm just saying that, yes, the internet is a very powerful tool, very powerful mechanism. And so this is a wonderful time to be living and to have ideas that are worthy of being spread.
And it also is an amazing thing that how it's being used in homeschooling, which to me was always one of my dreams. I was never allowed to do it, but I felt that the work, the information that I gave my kids at home, and the support I gave for their imagination and everything was equally important as to whatever they learned in school. And I'll bet you had the same thing.
Oh, yes, because, again, as I said, I had a very active and engaged imagination, and that is also, you know, a gift from God. And I think that the school system retards our information, our imagination, mm-hmm. just because it is a production factory, and oftentimes, I shall say, and I love our teachers, I love our school system, but at the same time, they don't have the funding and the training to really harness the imagination and the creative genius of a child. But one of the reasons why Einstein was so brilliant and able to do so many different groundbreaking discoveries was because he was allowed to imagine, and he, in fact, put a high penchant on his imagination and creative genius more so than anything. So, yes, that the internet as it relates to homeschooling and all schooling, you know, to the extent that it stays free and accessible, can help, you know, a child, you know, see what it's like to, you know, live abroad, even if they haven't lived abroad or live in color. But access to information that will spawn that genius is very, very important. Very, very important.
So, what do you attribute your success as a coach, as a life coach, to?
Yes, a life and business coach, and my company, actually Heirloom 360, Mary, will be launching May 1st, and you know, Heirloom is about handing something down, and I believe that we were put here to actually live a beautiful, abundant life that enables us to express our inner gifts and genius in service to the world, and to live a legendary life that's worthy of being talked about. You know, you might talk about, you know, your grandparents and some of the things that they were able to do. Well, a lot of people don't talk about them simply because, quite frankly, their lives, they didn't have the luxury of living a legendary life necessarily. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, because of the internet and all the things that are accessible to us, people can make a living and a wonderful living off of their gifts and talents really in a broad way, in a cost-effective way, for the first time in society.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, what has made me very effective is not only using my intuitive gifts, but my experience with Fortune 500 companies, marketing companies, as well as my formal academic training. And you don't see people with a fusion of those different skill sets in our industry. And so that's really what makes me very, very effective. But the other thing is I am following my life calling. So when you follow your life calling, you have a competitive edge over other people who are doing things just for the sake of money. And I have an acronym, Mary, called GAIN. And GAIN stands for your genius. So your genius, I believe, is encoded in your DNA. It's given to you by a God, by source. And so that's the G in GAIN.
Uh-huh.
A is audacious. Yes, A is audacious. And,
okay.
And so when you are tapped into what you are uniquely qualified to do, which is your genius, you are bold because you know that you are on target. You are operating in your zone of expertise. And
uh-huh.
so you can be very bold with what it is that you're doing because it comes so easily to you. And then the M in GAIN stands for magnetic or magnetizing. And when you are operating in your zone of genius and you are now bold, which means you are very convicted about what it is that you are doing, other people are attracted to you, so you're magnetic because of the fact that you are coming from a soul purpose, and people want to be led by people who know where they're going because we have so many people who are directionless. And then E is enlightenment. You know that these gifts, yes, these gifts are for you to share your light. That's the light and enlightenment with others, for the service of others. It's not for your own self-aggrandizement that you've been given these gifts. It is to be of service, and then you are paid with money. And so energetically, all those things complete a circle, which is the 360 and heirloom 360. So it all ties together. So knowing your game.
So, of course, there's the expression when you're on your game, you always know exactly where you're going, and you feel like everything's right, and the world's on your side, the universe is on your side. And then there's the top of your game is when you are doing the best that you can possibly do. And I like this a whole lot, you know. I can see where you're going with this, and I think that it's a, kind of an easy sell, to tell you the truth, as they would say in the advertising business.
Oh yes, because of the fact that people really know what their zone of genius is. It's what you were uniquely inclined to do on a day when you have free reign. You're going to deviate towards that all the time because that is what you were designed here to do. And if everybody would operate from that vantage point, we would have a world that was in synchronistic order. But because of the fact that people deviate from that, that's what causes depression. That's what causes us really not to have many of the ideas that were intended to be brought forth rest.
Yeah.
Order. They say the most expensive place is the graveyard because that's where all the works, you know, all the songs, all the things that were supposed to be put here, if we would have had the courage to follow that, that's where they're all buried. So...
Well, you've got something there. That is a big thing to think about. Oh my goodness! I suddenly got thirsty. You made me dry in the mouth here. But listen, this is pretty exciting. But how do you deal with, suppose someone comes to you, first of all, why do they come to you? Why do your clients seek you out?
Why?
Mm-hmm.
They seek me out because of the fact that they are wanting to find out how to actually monetize the gifts that they already have, the genius that they already have, and they want to be able to perfect that. And so we help them market that. In fact, I've actually aligned with the BLE group, and that, Mary, is the BLE as an elephant group.com. And that's a branding and marketing company that that enables us to be able to tell your story with technology. So using the website, using mobile apps. In fact, we have a promotion that if they mention this program, they can get a 20% discount on our services. But basically, they come to me because they have a unique genius or gift that they want to identify how to continue to expound upon it, and as you said, monetize it in a bigger way, and then we help them further. Also, with revenues, identifying how they can increase their revenues, opportunities for growth that perhaps they have not identified. They have a really their own marketing strategy team as a small business in myself and my partners to assist them.
Now, how do they find you in the first place?
Well, my my website actually is being redone, but they can contact me at 202-498-3495. That's 202-498-3495.
Mm-hmm. So you meet people? Do you give talks at various associations? How do you get the word out about the wonderful services that you have just waiting for the people who are smart enough to contact you?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I don't have any talks on the calendar just yet, but again, now heirloom360.com, that will be launching May 1st, and individuals will be able to keep up with my schedule there. But mostly right now, by way of word of mouth through my existing base as well as through networking and talks. And so we'll be able to move in a more viral capacity come in the second quarter of this year.
That's really great. Okay, so suppose someone comes to you. How do you begin? How do you really discover? And a lot of times, people really don't know what is their best attribute and what is the best thing that they could contribute to the world. Because it's kind of been squashed and they've been told, now stop that, pay attention, do your homework, do this, do that, and stop daydreaming. Now cut this out, you know. So many people just lose contact with their higher self.
Right. And, you know, the first thing would be, you know, as you indicated, that a lot of people are told not to do X, Y, Z, NLP. And so the first thing is, what do people compliment you about? What do people compliment you about the most? And then you want to ask the person, what lights you up? What gets you excited? Because sometimes even though people may compliment you about something, because you could have a lot of skills in your toolbox, it may not light you up. But what the fusion between what lights you up and what people compliment you about the most, that would be what we would call your sweet spot. That's where you get the acclaim without even trying, because you're operating in that zone of genius. And then once we identify that, then we try to see, well, what are the useful skill sets, okay, some of the skill sets from that could possibly be monetizable. And made into a real business, because if it doesn't make money, then it's a hobby, and that's fine too. You might have to do, you know, a vocation to actually earn a living, and then you may do a hobby feed your soul. But the best thing to do is a hobby can actually be turned into a legitimate business enterprise.
Yes, and you know, there have been studies that have shown that the self-made millionaires primarily they got their fortune by doing something that they would have done, they gladly have done for nothing, because they just loved it so much. So how can you pull that into your work with people?
Yes, because as I indicated, identify what it is that you love doing. You know, that lights you up. And you know, somebody like the inventors of Google, as an example, you know, they loved computer science. And they found a way to fuse information such that it was easier to obtain. They weren't looking to become, you know, millionaires or billionaires. When you're operating from your calling, you're operating, as I indicated, from a soul level. That this is what you were designed to do, and then you get rewarded in the end.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. With something that will be of service for the world. But your motivation should be to be here for what it is that you were uniquely designed and purposed to do, because we're all operating from a shared ecosystem, and everybody's role is not anyone's role is not more important than any role, because every role is needed. Picking up the trash is needed. If we didn't have people picking up the trash and taking care of the environment, we would be dead.
I just got this crazy vision of an anthill, and they say that every ant does their part of the work of making the anthill work, and that is why ants are so successful, that every single one of them is doing their part and doing something that's totally necessary to the whole. And what if this world acted that way? Would that be amazing?
Oh, absolutely. And when you say that somebody got shushed, you know, and stopped doing that as a child, and it made them hide, you know, their true calling and their true gifting. You know, there are things that could have very well have been invented. Even when we have hunches about ideas and inventions that were implanted in us for a unique purpose,
sure.
We don't follow through. We do not follow through.
Oh yeah, but
it just passed on.
When it goes on so often, you get to the point where you don't trust your own impulses. You don't trust your own spirit drive. It's terrible. It's so sad.
It is sad, but that's what we want to do at Heirloom 360, is to help people engineer a life where they're actually following their instincts, they're following their life purpose and their intuition, and they're serving the world in a wonderful capacity.
So you help to steer them back to their spiritual home, their the matrix of their dreams.
Absolutely, because that's where their soul is really going to be fed. Is through following their spirit.
So it sounds as if you you work covering the center of the central purpose and the dreams that are driving a person. And when you function from that center, from that core, you can't help but have a tremendous force.
Absolutely. And this is something that is becoming more and more accepted as it relates to popular culture. You know, for me, sometimes, you know, conversations like this in the past could have seemed, you know, airy-fairy and earthy-brainy and, you know, cosmic and unrealistic. And but a lot of the CEOs, Fortune 500, you know, CEOs, things of that nature, when they do things, they listen to the data. Don't get me wrong. They listen to their statisticians and their forecasters. Uh-huh. But when it's time to make a decision, they have a hunch, which is their intuition and their instinct that they follow. And that hunch has them take a bet on what it is that they think will be the next promised thing. And what will break the tie is what they have that unique feeling and that unique hunch about. But this whole conversation, again, of, you know, looking into your intuition and following your spirit is something that has always been done, but now it's become something that is okay to talk about, something that is okay to now embrace, and something that is okay to admit informs a lot of your key decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because of the universal energetic shift that we're seeing now post 2012, and so more and more you're going to see more and more people that are part of the traditional business community seek out the type of instruction and learning that has them tap more into, you know, their spirit and their inner guidance, because that's their competitive edge.
Uh-huh. You mentioned 2012, and so many people had dire predictions of Earth cataclysms, but I have always been convinced that those cataclysms are going to be internal, emotional, psychological, and spiritual changes rather than physical.
Oh, right. It's the movement in consciousness, just like, you know, back in the caveman times and the industrial age, you wouldn't have had a conversation about spirit. The consciousness, the collective consciousness of society is morphing. And this happens, you know, in cycles. And so we're just moving into a different cycle, which now has people like myself who, you know, again, would have thought of this conversation as, you know, over the top and not grounded, embracing. And I have friends who, you know, work on Wall Street and have, you know, very successful traditional corporate careers that would not embrace this kind of conversation, who behind closed doors embrace this conversation.
Sure. But let me ask you, could you tell us how your work has changed, say, one or two of your clients?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. There actually is a woman who is in private banking, and her role in private banking is to deal with high net worth attorneys. And in working with her, what we found is that she really has a dormant writer in her. And she's somebody that always loved literature, always loved writing. And then following traditional roles in society, she decided not to go into that field, that avenue, because of the fact that it wasn't something that was embraced and supported and cultivated. And when we discovered that, she now is actually not only writing books, but she's going to start to put out workshops that assist other people in how to find the book that's lying dormant within them.
So you give people permission to be themselves, and on top of that, you help them to show them that they can actually make money being their best. This is exciting.
Yes, and then there's another woman, Mary, who actually, ironically enough, went to law school, and, you know, we sat down, and she was talking about how she was, you know, having issues with passing the bar, but she really felt compelled that she needed to pass the bar. And in doing a discovery process and asking her, you know, why she felt that, what she was really seeking was approval and legitimacy. And my intuition was telling me that this is not something that she really was passionate about doing. And as we began to continue to, you know, talk and dig deeper, she said that she really loved fashion, and that and in fact the type of law that she was going into had to deal with you know, fashion houses and things of that nature. But I asked her, you know, is that really how she wanted to express her love of fashion? Because that is really in the law aspects of fashion. It's not the creative side. And to make
it's the most boring part of all, yeah.
Right, and it's not dealing with fashion. It's dealing with the industry, but
sure.
But the media itself. And so, make a long story short, we're helping her actually brand herself to be a fashion and wardrobe consultant, because this is what really lights her up. How to actually package herself so that she can get a pay on a quarterly basis for doing things associated with, you know, a fashion and wardrobe, you know, styling and things of that nature. And that is really what lights her up at the end of the day. So as opposed to being in a state of drudgery and regret for the rest of her life, she's doing something that is helping her realize her gifts, her genius, and what she was designed here to do. And I think that everybody should have a live life lit, a life that's lived so that they're lit up every day. Because if you have to go through life, you might as well do it doing something that lights you up.
That's for sure. That's for sure. So, as you work with people, you literally help them to discover their true self, and their true calling, and the genius that, and this is the whole basis of this show, is I'm totally convinced that we all come in with tremendous genius and gifts for this world. And by the time they housebreak us and potty train us and brainwash us, most of us find ourselves out of touch with that wonderful gift that we came in to give the world.
Oh, absolutely. And I just think that now is the perfect time to be alive, because you have very low barriers to entry, unless it's a product-based business where you have to have a lot of the, you know, widgets manufactured in advance for savings. But if you are a creative person living now, there's no reason why you cannot monetize your genius to actually have a profession created from your innate accounts. I do see, like I said before, during the industrial age, how you didn't have the freedom and the autonomy to be fully expressed. But now we have the ability to be fully expressed. And so I give people basically the permission, because we're going through a cycle where it's becoming more and more accepted to be in these different types of professions and not to be part of the traditional corporate route, which there's nothing wrong with that because, as I said, not one is not greater than the other. It's just operating from a space of what it was that you were uniquely designed to do really is my mission. So I give people the permission to do that, and then we give them the structures to do it.
Uh-huh. And do you have short-term or long-term clients or both?
Basically, I like to work with people for a minimum of 3 months because it usually is going to take that long to really see a growth and to keep people on their track. So 3 months would be the shortest time.
I see. So that would just be to get people on their track. What about along the way with when they have a vision and they go for it and they run into all of these complications and things fall apart and they doubt themselves whether or not they really made the right decision. Are you there for them then?
Oh, absolutely. Because I take it, you know, personal responsibility to be a guidepost for them as they journey through, you know, their walk. And they're gonna have you know, times where they are gonna feel like, did I make the right decision? Did I go down the right path? They're gonna be, you know, circumstances in which they will fall victim to what I call the monkey mind, and that's designed to keep us. That's designed to keep us safe, but it's a very primitive mind. So they're going to come up against certain things. But yes, to answer your question, I'm absolutely accessible to my clients.
Okay, good. Well, it sounds like. Like things are moving. It sounds as if you are a living example of what you offer to your clients, because it seems as if you have found the thing that really turns you on, that lights you up inside and out. And because I see the sparkle in your eye when you start talking about what you believe in and what your dream is, and this is number one in building client confidence.
Well, yes, and you know they say that we go into the profession of where we see ourselves. And so we basically are helping ourselves. So we are our own best client because, you know, I felt that I had to lead a traditional route and to go a traditional, you know, way. And I found myself to not be fulfilled. So I know uniquely what it is like to charter a different course, charter a different path, and to create something out of an idea, out of an inclination, out of a hunch.
And to leave the safety of a traditional, totally accepted, secure profession and follow your dream.
Right, because there's nobody that told me. One of the nicknames for myself is, you know, a life and business instigator. And, you know, I get in there as the advocate and kind of instigate some of the assumptions that you've made about your capability and your unique genius and gifting.
Uh-huh.
That's something that, again, you're not going to find going to an online library of potential careers.
And for sure.
You know, for somebody,
your counselor in high school so often sets your whole career path, and these people are most of them are totally unqualified. I mean, they're glorified secretaries, shall we say? You know.
Right. Exactly. And even at business school, this would not have been an avenue that would have been, accepted or even talked about as an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Times have changed, and definitely, you know, being there for the client and letting them know that they are charting a legitimate course, and a course that can be very viable, is really my role.
I'd love it if you would just take a moment and, as if you were talking one-to-one to the audience, what would you learn? What would, if you could say anything you wanted to them, what would you say?
I would say that I would really challenge you to sit with yourself and to ask, if my life were going to be over with in 5 years, would I feel as though I gave from my quiet space the world the gift of who it is that I was called to be? And if that is not a resounding yes, because you beat a whole bunch of other, if we look at being born as being in the assembly line, mm-hmm. and our card was called, our number was called, and we're here, you're taking up air, but you're taking up air for a purpose. And so if you have 5 years left to get it right, I would say you feel like you're not getting it right, or you're partially getting it right, and you need some guidance, to give me a call at 202-498-3495 so that we can help you extract, expound upon, and light the world up with your genius, so that at the end you can say that you had an heirloom life, a life that was worthy of being talked about because you served from the heart. And that's what I would say.
Well said. Well said. Ruby, believe it or not, we are just running out of time. And I'd love to take this last couple of moments, as we usually do, and do a little guided imagery, a little focusing and concentration, and sinking into the self.
Okay.
So close your eyes. Take a nice deep breath. And then tense your body. Just make your whole body a fist until you're trembling. And when you feel that, collapse like a rag doll. And as you breathe, just ride that breath, just float on that breath, deep inside. When you exhale, blow away everything that is between you and accomplishing your dreams. Blow it away. Another deep breath and float deeper and deeper through the levels of consciousness. Blow away all the tensions. Just let it go. All the doubts and criticisms. And float in deeper as you inhale again. Floating into that perfect, beautiful space inside where anything is possible, everything works. There's nothing but support and positive love and freedom. And just soak up that beautiful peace, power, and focus. Just soak it up and just fill yourself. And then just gently take another deep breath. Stretch a little bit. Wiggle your fingers and toes, coming back to what we usually call normal consciousness. Open your eyes and have a wonderful day. And as we close, with love and light.